In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, September 22nd, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry Chatter Day in the 3 o'clock hour on the program today. And my guest is Tony Jimenez, the president, CEO, and founder of Microtech. And you're here to talk about what he is seeing in the marketplace when it comes to doing business with the federal government. Tony, great to have you on the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Francis. It's great to be here.
Tell me about Microtech, what you do, and the kinds of government clients that you serve.
Well, our primary focus is actually morphing a little bit like the needs of the federal government. We started off primarily focused on network support.
Mm-hmm.
And helping the federal government achieve what they needed to achieve in the IT and network space. And we've kind of morphed into providing a little bit more, and we find that our customers, particularly our federal clients and customers, really like an end-to-end type solution with everything in mind, particularly the products that go into to providing the kind of support they need, as well as the services, as well as the people that need to be trained at a much higher level in order to sort through some of the disparities, you know, and some of the issues that they encounter when you bring together a lot of different kind of systems to make it all work.
Mm-hmm. Talk about some of the projects that you're working on or have recently completed for agencies.
Well, we're doing a lot of things right now around cloud computing, and our big focus has been, you know, what does cloud computing mean, and particularly what does cloud computing mean in the federal space?
Mm-hmm.
And how can you take cloud computing and make it work in a way that you do away with the security concerns, obviously, that federal customers have, but more importantly, that you're gaining those efficiencies by taking things and putting them into the cloud that make sense and that don't pose the kind of security concerns that people are worried about. And we've really focused a little bit more on the private cloud, with our focus being the solutions behind the firewall that ultimately our federal customer owns.
Mm-hmm.
And they manage and monitor and ensure that they're gaining that efficiency that they're looking for, while at the same time moving into a new kind of model that allows them to be a little bit more responsive, a little bit quicker, and allows their users to be able to access that information wherever they are.
Was it a strategic decision that led you to focus more on the private cloud, or was it just your customer saying this is what we want and you saw that's where the market was?
I think it had a lot to do with the fact that I started out in the government, and I've got a lot of people who did also, and who look at where does it seem like it has to go just because of the efficiencies involved and what makes sense, and where kind of trying to anticipate the needs of the federal government before they're able to anticipate their own needs.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is staying in touch, knowing your clients, understanding what their needs are, understanding what the challenges are, and the challenges around ensuring that they're able to do it cheaper, faster, better than they were able to do it a year ago or 5 years ago, without the kind of inconveniences that you might think would come along with improvements.
Mm-hmm.
So it really kind of was out of necessity, but was also out of just being intuitive and understanding where the market needed to go.
The decision to figure out, are we in a public cloud, a hybrid cloud, or a private cloud mode, is challenging enough for agencies to figure out. What's the next step there, do you think, once agencies decide which direction they want to go?
I'm not sure that you can ever really decide, because it changes so rapidly. There might be new applications or new capabilities that didn't exist this time 6 months ago or this time a year ago that might lend themselves very well to a cloud solution type environment, where there might be legacy systems that you're dependent on that don't. And you just you really almost have to do a daily assessment. It's kind of like driving and trying to decide, do you move into the right lane or the left lane or the center lane, and what's traffic doing? And it's kind of the same thing when you're negotiating, your way through the network and network solutions. What do you need to use, and how do you leverage it, and what companies have the kind of expertise you need to be able to do the things you need to do? So a lot of challenges, but I think a lot of them are really more around what's the fit, where are you trying to go, and what do you need to get there?
I have heard that a lot of agencies use the presence of legacy systems as a good excuse to not worry about or think about or look into a cloud transition. Is that still something that you're seeing, and is that still a valid excuse, do you think?
I think it's reasonable to understand why that might be a concern, and I think it is a valid concern. But what they need to be looking at is, there's end of life for a lot of those legacy systems where they're just no longer supported. And the question they need to be asking themselves is, am I preparing for when that happens? Am I going to be a part of that happening to me and my next strategy? Or is it going to happen to me and I'm not going to have a next strategy and I'm going to be in a reactive mode rather than a proactive mode? Mm-hmm. So I think it's valid, but I also think that a customer who wants to ensure that they're remaining relevant and that they're able to do the things they need to do need to have an eye on their legacy systems and when they're going to be able to make that transformation, that transition from what they've got to where they need to be and what products are going to allow them to do that.
How are agencies doing on that strategic planning? That's something that's been a weakness from time to time for various agencies.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of it is driven by dollars. Mm. You have to spend money to save money, and I know that sounds kind of crazy, but there has to be some upfront cost, and you have to be able to invest. It's like anything else. You have to buy solar panels to be able to reduce your energy, but over the long term, when you count the years and benefits, it adds up, and it's the same way with hybrids and the same way with anything that we use to bring those efficiencies to bear. There has to be that initial investment, but you need to understand what are the total cost of ownership? What is the total cost of ownership for you to be able to move from that first expenditure to an eventual, okay, it's paid for itself, and now I've got real savings coming mm-hmm. in?
Are agencies getting better at being able to demonstrate up the chain that life cycle cost and the benefit of a little bit of investment now, or maybe in some cases a lot of investment now, for long-term savings down the road?
I think they are. I think what we're seeing happen is we get a lot of our customers that call us and say, we'd like you to come in and do a look, kind of an evaluation or a determination of what we've got in place. And we go in and we do an evaluation. We make the determination of what they've got. We look at what they have that could be transitioned, whether it be 6 days, 6 weeks, 6 months, 6 years, and come out together working with them on a plan and then adjust that plan based upon the amount of money they have to spend and show them where they're going to hit those gates of efficiency and when and what investment is going to give them what kind of a return faster and what are some of the systems. But the biggest thing that we get a lot of a surprise from our customers when we show them how much they're actually spending on energy and mm-hmm. how much they're actually spending on some of the applications that aren't giving them the kind of things that they thought they were going to be getting.
Yeah. And we talked about life cycle costs a little bit. Is that whole cost of ownership thing something that agencies are also getting a better grip on? Because as you said, some agencies aren't thinking about how much they're spending on powering the data centers and all those kinds of things.
Well, and I think it really depends on who you talk to. The user doesn't have the responsibility of having to look at that. They're mm-hmm. more concerned about, am I getting what I need to be able to do what I need to do to accomplish my mission, to do my job? And the people that are responsible for putting that in there for them, whether it's on a desktop, whether it's in a network, definitely have to understand that because they have to make smart buys and they have to make sure that those purchases that they're responsible for doing are smart purchases and that they're getting as much as they possibly can get for their money.
Tony Jimenez is my guest. He's the president, CEO, and founder of Microtech on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation on industry chatter in just a moment.
Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention wants to let its employees use their own smartphones on its network. Jaspal Sagu is CDC's chief technology officer. He says the agency recently expanded a bring-your-own-device pilot of less than 50 people to more than a few hundred. These employees are accessing their calendar, email, and other basic tools via their own personal smartphones. Sagu says CDC needs better cybersecurity tools before letting employees access sensitive data on personal smartphones.
If you're in federal IT, you know that every internet connection and every mobile device poses a threat to your data. Visit cdwg.com/security to learn how our security experts use the latest technology to help keep your agency ahead of those threats. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how scalable security solutions from McAfee can defend your agency's network with less to deploy and manage.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
A call for more diversity in the federal workplace via executive order from President Obama. The President's Management Council, the Office of Management and Budget, the Office of Personnel Management, and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission have to develop a four-year plan and issue guidance by November 16th. And it's not the first time a president has issued this sort of order, but President Obama says the government has to retain a more diverse workforce. I'm Amy Morris.
Will you be receiving a 25% life insurance premium refund check from your insurance company? Federal employees with WEPA Life Insurance will be receiving over $6 million in premium refunds this fall. Since 1996, WEPA has refunded over $58 million in premiums. In comparison, Fegley has never issued a premium refund. Isn't it time you considered WEPA for your family's life insurance needs? For better insurance, better prices, and better value, visit WAEPA.org. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Do you know us? We employ more than 70,000 people in more than 800 locations throughout the United States. Through our network of suppliers, we indirectly enable tens of thousands of American jobs. Tens of thousands. Jobs that put food on the table. Jobs that put kids through college. Jobs that keep our economy going. And yet, many of you don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. We may be the biggest unknown company in America, but our jobs power the economy, and our technologies, products, and services power the world. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday morning's Federal Drive, a nifty trick some managers are doing to save money, classifying full-time employees as contractors. That trend is catching on, but it's illegal. And now the IRS and labor are teaming up. And Washington University is partnering with the Brookings Institution to offer a special Master's of Science in Leadership just for feds. That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Tony Jimenez is the president, CEO, and founder of Microtech, and he is my guest on Industry Chatter today. And every week at this time, I talk to a vendor from the federal community who deals with the federal agencies. But you have a unique perspective because you, as you mentioned in the first segment, were inside government for a time. Talk about how you, talk about your experience inside government, how it informs the way that you run Microtech and approach agencies in what you're doing now.
Well, I think the beautiful thing was, you know, I spent 24 years in the military and had an opportunity to work with some amazing people, both in Department of Defense as well as outside of the Department of Defense. And I was just blown away with the amount of innovation and the amount of thinking outside the box, as we called it, and just how amazingly bright the folks that were in the federal government were. But unfortunately, sometimes because it is a very, very large organization, it's very hard to get those ideas and those innovative ways of doing things where you need to get them. And that's one of the things that I leveraged my contractors for. I mean, they gave me a voice that could be heard because we expect our contractors, the people we're bringing in to ease the pain, to be smart. And if they're not, we'll go find somebody who's smart and we'll bring them in. And with the things that we think need to be done and the things that they need to think that they think need to be done, we can just really bring in what we really need, what we used to call in those days, and probably I'm sure they still do, commercial best practices.
Mm-hmm.
But I would talk all the time about government best practices. You know, what does the government do that allows them to be able to run the biggest organization anybody's ever provided capabilities to? What is it that allows them to run this extremely unique organization efficiently? And many, many organizations run much more efficiently than Fortune 500 mm-hmm. divisions the same size.
Mm-hmm. That's something that I think gets lost in all of the conversations about size of government and so on and so forth. The size doesn't seem to me, at least, to be as relevant as the efficiency of the operation. And I think people who, like yourself, who work in both the commercial sector and the government sector, have some pretty interesting stories to tell about the misconception, I think, that the private sector is this monolith of efficiency and so on, and that the things that happen in government, the problems that happen, especially in IT projects in government, never happen in the private sector. That's probably not close to the truth, is it?
Oh, it's nowhere near the truth. Absolutely.
Tell me how the experience that you had when you were in government affects the way that you approach agencies now, and how you are able to demonstrate to them the potential for innovation and the potential for changing the way they do business when maybe they're not as receptive to it as you were when you were in government service.
Well, I think most of the time they understand that because I came from the government, and because I was sitting not too long ago in the same seat they're sitting in, making the decision, trying to decide which solution is the best solution for my organization, that it allows me many times to put myself in their shoes and understand the challenges they've got, and not just the challenges to provide a capability or a service, but a challenge to be a good steward of money. The challenge to make sure that they're representing their organization in a fair manner, the rules, the regulations, the processes, the policies, that they're not violating any of those, and that they're running it at maximum efficiency. But more importantly, a lot of times they're solving problems that they themselves are not necessarily experiencing, but they know that others in the organization might be.
Mm-hmm.
And they really have to put on those glasses that allow them to increase their peripheral vision so that they can see not just what's going on in their organization, but all the organizations that they have been empowered or that they have been given the responsibility to provide that capability or that support or do that purchase for.
Mm-hmm. The peripheral vision issue is something, it kind of goes along with what we talked about in the first segment with the entrepreneurial spirit. Why do you think the government gets shortchanged when it comes to that? Because you see the same thing I see, people doing really creative, really visionary things inside agencies.
I think a lot of the time it's just people who have never served, people who have never spent any time in the federal government and who have a preconceived notion that, the federal government, because of the things they see and because of the things they hear, particularly in the news, they believe those to be true without knowing firsthand that there are some amazing people in the federal government that do an amazing job of buying goods and buying services for their agencies and their organizations, and that they can figure it out, and they figure it out very well. And sometimes it's just a matter of fine-tuning the process and making sure that it keeps up. And that's hard to do, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of unfortunate things that happen when you take a very good idea to any large organization, whether it be the federal government or not, and that challenge is called change. And, I had a boss when I was in the Army who used to say nobody likes change except a wet baby. and that is the challenge, to get them to understand that change is not necessarily painful,
mm-hmm.
and that they're in good hands, and then you have to deliver. And the unfortunate thing is sometimes it just life gets in the way. Challenges happen. People do things that create a different focus than when you originally went in to do the network. And we as a government have those daily challenges of emergency things that happen, of just situational things that prop up that make it just a little bit more difficult because somebody comes down and puts an additional constraint on your ability to do what you need to do. So it's a moving target, and flexibility is required, and not being afraid of change, but embracing it.
It sounds like you're talking on a more broad scale about what others have talked to me about when it comes to things like shifting requirements inside projects and things like that.
Absolutely. Or having the money that you were counting on to get the project done reduced because it has to go somewhere else to take care of something that has just become more of a priority than what you you had.
Mm-hmm.
And you may have started off with your priority being the number one priority, but because it took a year or 2 years or 3 years to implement, it quickly moves down the chain of importance. And you have to be able to understand that those are the issues you're dealing with when you're in the federal government. And as a government contractor, those are the issues you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
It's how to continue to give the customer, our federal customer, what they need and make absolutely sure that at the end of the day they're happy and you're happy. Because if I'm doing a job and I'm unhappy because I'm not getting paid enough, I'm not interested in doing it very much longer.
Yeah. Tony Jimenez is my guest. He's the president, CEO, and founder of Microtech, and we'll continue our conversation on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
I'm like you. I watch the cherry blossoms bloom in the spring. I live amongst monuments and museums. I enjoy walks on the National Mall. Washington, D.C. is my home. This is where I found my career. I am a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. That's right, the Coast Guard. The Coast Guard provides me with great workplace training and excellent federal benefits. It allows me to live my life to the fullest. I have time off to travel and have flexible work hours so I can spend time with my family. Coast Guard gives me access to childcare, health and fitness programs, and first-class health insurance, life insurance, and retirement benefits. This is my career. It's how I serve. Find out more about U.S. Coast Guard positions available in D.C. and across the U.S. at CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. That's CoastGuardCivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
The Cloud Computing Report is brought to you by Trusted Enterprise Cloud, an innovative cloud computing solution from Harris Corporation and VMware.
The National Institute of Standards and Technology has published two new documents on cloud computing. The first identifies current cloud computing standards and standardization gaps. The second, a cloud reference architecture, lays out the difference between cloud consumers, providers, brokers, auditors, and carriers. The agency says it was designed to create a level playing field for cloud contractors. NIST expects to publish the documents in November as part of its cloud computing technology roadmap.
Are you looking to move software and applications to the cloud, but you're concerned about security and reliability? Then take a look at Trusted Enterprise Cloud, a world-class cloud computing system with patented trust technology built in. Go to harris.com/cloud, and you can request a design review with a solutions architect. That's harris.com/cloud.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Dieting, exercise, and diabetes. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Women may be able to prevent getting type 2 diabetes by dieting and exercising. A new study suggests that combined the two activities have the greatest result. Postmenopausal women were separated into four groups for 1 year. Dr. Caitlin Mason is at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center in Seattle.
We saw the greatest improvement in the diet and exercise group, followed by the diet alone group.
Aside from weight loss, exercise showed it has other benefits.
Exercise seemed to have these special effects, and this might have to do with the fact that exercise stimulates muscle, and muscle is a major user of blood sugar.
The study in the American Journal of Preventive Medicine was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Hi, this is Michelle Moore, the Federal Environmental Executive. I'd like to invite you to join us at the 2011 GreenGov Symposium, co-hosted by the White House Council on Environmental Quality and the Association of Climate Change Officers, for 3 days of cutting-edge educational sessions on the business of sustainability and greening the government. Connect with more than 1,000 of your peers at this year's GreenGov from October 31st to November 2nd in Washington, D.C. For more information and to register online, visit greengov2011.org.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tony Jimenez is my guest on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and this is Industry Chatter. And we're talking about dealing with federal agencies and the experiences that Tony is having, that you're having in dealing with those agencies. We talked about cloud computing in the first segment, and you brought up the first thing that people usually bring up when it comes to the cloud, and that's security. What do the agencies want to know from you when they're asking you about security, particularly as it relates to the cloud?
Well, they want to know if it's secure. You know, they've got, many have some preconceived notions that when you go into the cloud, anybody can just come in there and take your stuff. It's kind of like flying in a real cloud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a bunch of people fly in and, you know, then you kind of hope you eventually fly out. And while you're in the cloud, you can't really see where you're going or what's going on. And it's really more of a term than it is. It's not an analogy. It probably is in the sense that, a lot can happen in the cloud that mm-hmm. you don't see. It is probably the reason it was chosen. But it really is. The big concern seems to be not only security, but does when I go to the cloud, does that mean I'm outsourcing? And mm-hmm. it doesn't. It's one of those preconceived notions that the two things I'm giving up when I go into a cloud, whether it's a private cloud, a hybrid cloud, a public cloud, is that first thing is security, and the second thing is, oh my goodness, now I'm outsourcing all of my capabilities, when the fact is that's not what's happening. What you're doing is you're maximizing your efficiency by being able to put the applications in the cloud and use those applications on an as-needed basis.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to a much more directed use of your capabilities than just buying up a bunch of stuff, putting it on a server, and hoping somebody actually needs it. And every time a new software comes out, you put it on there and you say, there it is, and nobody ever logs on or uses it.
Mm-hmm.
So your utilization rate is tremendously low. And if you were to look at a network the way we look at planes or the way we look at transportation, if you were to go out and buy a bunch of planes and put one person on every plane, we'd say, man, that was a terrible way to do business. Yet what we're finding is in the network space, we're out buying hundreds and even thousands of different applications, putting them out there on our network, and they're not getting used. And when they're not used and utilization is low, nobody knows or has a way of measuring that. It's out there, and if one person says they need it, we buy it. And as long as nobody says, gee, I sure wish I had that, it's good,
mm-hmm.
without understanding that we've just paid maybe even millions of dollars for an application that's not getting the kind of utilization it ought to be getting.
Are agencies surprised when they go back and try to audit these or whatever and figure out that, oh, my heavens, we've blown this amount of money and this has been used 10 times?
Well, and that's one of the challenges. And the other challenge is that when you turn it off, nobody complains because nobody's using it.
Right. The whole concept of security, what I was just thinking as you were talking about the apprehensions that people have. Woody Hall told me a while back that the name cloud computing is probably the worst thing that happened to the concept of cloud computing because it's caused that mindset that people have and maybe even inadvertently some of the misconceptions that people have about it.
Yeah, I think the neatest thing that could have happened is if they'd have called it safety deposit box computing. You know, you rent a safety deposit box inside the bank. It's
uh-huh.
your box. Nobody else uses it. You got the key. They got the key. You put your stuff in it. It's important. And you know it's always there. And even if somebody robs a bank, 9 times out of 10, they're not going to get the safe deposit box.
Right.
So you feel a lot more secure about having it in that safe deposit box. Well, bad news for everybody. That's a cloud.
Uh-huh.
And it's exactly the same way.
Yeah.
When I take my stuff and I put it in a cloud and it's a secure private cloud, that capability stays there. The only one that has access to it are the people that I give the key to, and those people can only get to it when they have the key and when I allow them that access.
Mm-hmm.
So, and there are exceptions to that, and obviously if it's not well done or if it hasn't been structured properly or if the right permissions haven't been granted, there are issues, but just as there would be if you had a bank with a safe deposit box or where they allowed anybody who wanted to come in and open it up and take things out.
Mm-hmm. Can I save the same amount of money for my agency with a private cloud that I could with a public cloud?
You know, that it'd really hard to say. And I can't sit here and tell you that it's going to be cheaper for everybody. I mean, it's not a one-size-fits-all. And it's not a, you know, one agency can buy the exact same thing another agency buys. Everybody's network looks different,
mm-hmm.
and everybody uses different applications, and their users are different, and their utilization's different, and their server construction's different, and their network's built different. And to do it, it's best that you get an assessment, and you determine what you need, and then you sit down and you figure out the facts. And it's kind of like being able to do an estimate on a car or being able to do a tune-up. And there's some things that you want to get everything done, but you can't afford to get everything done. So you say, this week I'll do the oil change, and next week I'll get the fan belt done, or the following week I'll get tires replaced, or,
mm-hmm.
or you know, I'm going to get that dent taken out. And you get what you can get that makes sense for you. And the things that don't make sense, you don't necessarily do.
When the agencies are doing these analyses and trying to do their strategic planning, what's the biggest, won't use the word mistake, but what is the biggest challenge for doing these assessments that the agencies are having?
I think probably the biggest thing is trying to do too much mm-hmm. too fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, and I can't say that it won't work, but it's extremely hard to make a situation with what we call a lights on, lights off type situation.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm here. I'm going to turn the lights off, and when I turn them back in, I'm going to be in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got the ability to do that, you've either spent a tremendous amount of money or your network is not very complex. and I don't think that you want either of those situations. Most of the government customers that we work with have very complex networks, very
mm-hmm.
complex systems. Their enterprises are gigantic, and they're doing a lot of things. And things are getting unified in a fashion that we've never experienced before. So many things running over the Internet. IP is the center of what's going on in the network these days, with voice over IP and video over IP and your network systems running on it, and so many things being done. That what ends up traditionally happening is people try to do it in too big a gulps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to do it in bite-sized pieces. It's like trying to eat the turkey whole. Can't do it.
Tony Jimenez is the president and CEO of Microtech and my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. About the only IT buzzword we haven't talked about in this hour is mobile computing, and I want to talk about the convergence of mobile and cloud when we come back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue in just a moment.
Did you leave it? Where could it have possibly gone? It's frustrating because you used to have your motivation with you all the time, and now, ugh. That's okay. We'll help you find it. First, let's find your reason. You know, your reason. What's that thing that makes you want to live to an age where you can say whatever you want to whomever you want, and somehow it becomes charming? Next, find your thing. What is that healthy thing you actually love doing? There's got to be one, right? Finally, go find your partner. Who's the ping to your pong? The downward to your dog? Who'll keep your butt moving and vice versa? Find all of those things. We're pretty sure your motivation will magically appear. But if you're still having trouble finding it, try looking really, really hard in the mirror. We're Kaiser Permanente, and we're here to help you find your motivation to thrive. Visit thrive.kp.org.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. The nation's largest intelligence event of the year returns to San Antonio, Texas, October 16th through the 19th. Network with professionals from the defense, intelligence, and homeland security communities at the GEOINT 2011 Symposium. USGIF's GEOINT Symposium features keynote speakers from agencies, combatant commands, and Congress, as well as panel sessions and breakout tracks tackling the critical issues affecting national security. Register now or learn more at GEOINT2011.com. That's GEOINT2011.com.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Newsmakers talk to Emily Kopp on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe.
We are not going to sit back and do nothing on this. I am not going to allow this organization to drown in red ink, and I'm also not going to be in a situation where I'm standing there expecting somebody else to take care of our issues for us.
Hear the entire interview online at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tony Jimenez is the president, CEO, and founder of Microtech, my guest on Industry Chatter today. Just about every agency is looking at cloud computing, as we've talked about so far in the program. Also, just about every agency is trying to figure out a strategy for mobile computing. What's the convergence there? What is the interaction between mobile computing and cloud computing, and what's the benefit for an agency that's ultimate goal is not just to be successful in IT, but to meet whatever the mission of the agency is?
Well, I think that, you know, there's just so many benefits that it's hard to really, you know, narrow it down to even 20. The biggest advantage that we see is the savings in just a number of things, cost, and the fact that your data is accessible to you on a regular basis through just about any medium you have available to you. I can access my network from my iPad. I can access my network from my mobile phone. I can access my network from my home computer. I can access my network while I'm on the road. And I can work just as efficiently from home as I can sitting at my desk, and it feels very much like it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a voice over IP phone right on my desk at home that allows me to be able to pick up the phone and talk to my folks, even through an intercom, as though they're sitting right next door. And sometimes I have to remind myself that I need to go to work because I'm at work.
Yeah.
So the ability to telecommute or to be able to work from home is something that we decided we wanted to get in, and it actually drove us more into the mobile cloud solution by being a unified communications company first,
mm-hmm.
and then realizing the benefits of moving to the cloud with that kind of capability under our belt.
You had the advantage of being able to go to agencies and say, not only do we have some ideas, but we have experience because this is how we do it, I guess.
Absolutely. And it's embraced. We've got a number of customers in the federal government. Right now, we do over 25,000 secure video teleconferencing calls a year. I mean, that's a massive amount, 25,000. Mm-hmm. And our government customers are becoming so comfortable with working on video and working from a mobile computing platform that it's scary. And the amazing thing is we have wireless capability that allows me to pull out my laptop or pull out my computer and work directly, regardless of whether I'm on a plane or where I am. We did a video teleconferencing call using internet on a plane, and people were blown away. They couldn't understand. You got to be kidding me. You're on a plane? And
wow.
Now that there's internet there, you have that ability. Anywhere where the internet is, mm-hmm. you have the ability to be able to engage as though you're sitting at your desk.
What do you say to agencies who are going, the things that we're able to do today, talk about stuff like that, and 2 years ago or 5 years ago, you would have said, in 2 or 5 years, you'll be able to do this. I would have said, forget it. So how do I strategize? How do I plan during tight budget times for possibilities that I can't even think about now in the 2 to 5 year window?
Well,
or do I not even try and I just kind of go with the flow and try to keep an open mind?
I think, and it's going to sound kind of self-serving, but I think you rely on your contractor workforce. I mean, the folks that I hire, are the best of both breeds. They've spent, many of them, a lot of time with the federal government. Many of them are former government employees, whether they're military or GS. They know what the customer needs, and they're very, very bright folks who came out, and I've just bombarded with training classes and capabilities, and they've just excelled. And I've given them the tools they need to allow them to be able to do the things they need to do. And when you couple that with very bright people who are in the federal government and who are working on a daily basis to help the government solve some of their problems, then come up with some amazing ways to use that thing that you thought there was only one or two things that it could do.
Mm-hmm.
My folks can come up with 20 different ways to do it when they put their minds to it and they get together with our government customers and they brainstorm. It's like watching a concert take place.
Now, yeah. when an agency's looking for a solution, though, and you have that level of innovation at your company, and you're not the only vendor with a high level of innovation and so on, are the agencies equipped, are the acquisition shops at the agencies equipped to be able to discern between different ways to get to a particular destination and make that decision?
The answer is some are. Unfortunately, some are... A lot of times in when you look at a proposal, you wonder if they're asking for what they want rather than what they need. And, mm-hmm. But the flexibility a lot of times that's available, as long as obviously the statement of work is written correctly and you go in and you're not exceeding the scope or you're not violating any rules, if the flexibility is written in there and the understanding is this is technology and it changes every day,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't change for the worse, it gets better.
Right.
It's on a slope that allows it to improve. And to keep in mind that to lock a person, to lock a company, to lock a contract down and make it so restrictive, knowing that that's going to change because technology is changing on a daily basis, really kind of hampers your ability to do the things you need to do to take that customer to the next level. And I understand why it's done.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I spent a lot of years in the government, and I was a contracting officer. And the last thing you want is somebody coming in and essentially creating a situation where what you've got is you've got a meltdown or a capability that is kind of blown out of proportion, and now it's gold-plated, and the customer doesn't really need that, and the contractor's shoving it down the throat of the end user. But there also has to be what I encourage many of my customers is don't write innovation out of your capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Allow enough flexibility in your contract to be able to improve what it is you're buying and to give that flexibility to your end user so that you have the ability to take a mobile computing device and give it a little bit more accessibility and bring in some different applications and maybe even some different vendors to help supplement what you bought to ensure that you're getting the best possible.
Now that leads me to agile development and a lot of people do, but there are kind of two schools of thought that I've heard, and one of them seems to be more prevalent in the defense realm. In the DOD realm more than the civilian agencies. But one is it's really good that every month or every year or 18 months we're relooking at these projects. And the other school of thought is for a year to 18 months to maybe 2 years, it's going to be harder to get vendors to go in on that, knowing that at the end of that time they've spent that R&D time, they've spent that they've actually worked on the project, and it might just poof go away. What do you think? Why is it that you love Agile, and that's your first response when I bring up the name?
I think because it takes you to the next level, and you can't get there if you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
I once had a good friend who compared it to a college degree. I mean, poof, you graduate college and it's all gone.
Mm-hmm.
But is it really gone? You just had a 4-year experience. You're smarter. You're better equipped for where you're going, and you've spent a small fortune. And it's not gone. It's there. The experience, the knowledge, the capabilities that you possess, and more important, you're now equipped for the next level. That's kind of how I look at it. And yeah, it is a lot of money, and everybody wants to make sure that you've got something tangible to show for what you've got. But a lot of times that capability that comes about by understanding that there's 5 options and eliminating 4 of them sometimes cost a little bit of money.
It sounds to me then like the main thing is just attitude, how you approach each situation in which you find yourself.
I think that's an important part, and you just have to make sure that the customer, that you set the expectation and that the customer understands that they are getting something for every dollar that's being spent, and that the value that comes out of that is a better product in the end, a happier customer, a happier client, a greater capability. Now, if you spend a lot of money and you got nothing, I mean truly nothing, there's no value, there's no lessons learned, you can't take the right, you haven't determined what your best option is because you just wasted all your money on one option and you could have wasted it on four options, it's not necessarily a good thing to be looking at. But a lot of times what you come out with is you've eliminated the possibilities of failure, and more importantly, you're going to get where you need to get. And it's a part of R&D. Everything you do is not going to be successful, and everything I've done hasn't led to my success as an entrepreneur, but it's contributed to my success.
Mm-hmm. Tony Jimenez is my guest. He's the president, CEO, and founder of Microtech, and we'll be back to wrap up today's Industry Chatter program in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government technology professionals should prepare to attend GovCom 2011, the new trade show featuring government audiovisual communication solutions at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center, November 1st and 2nd, featuring nearly 100 leading manufacturers and solutions providers showcasing the latest in audio, video, conferencing, collaboration, control systems, digital signage, and visual display technologies. GovCom will help government agencies and the military boost collaboration, enhance security, improve reliability, and cut costs. GovCom is your opportunity to see cutting-edge communications products, network with fellow technology professionals, and get valuable training from leading experts in government and industry. For more information and your free exhibits pass, visit govcom2mshow.org and use the code FED. That's govcomshow.org. GovCom is brought to you by Infocom International, the association representing the audiovisual industry.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
A call for more diversity in the federal workplace via executive order from President Obama. The President's Management Council, the Office of Management and Budget, the Office of Personnel Management, and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission have to develop a four-year plan and issue guidance by November 16th. And it's not the first time a president has issued this sort of order, but President Obama says the government has to retain a more diverse workforce. I'm Amy Morris.
These are hard times for federal employees. A multi-year pay freeze, rumors of furloughs, and discussions on reducing benefits are the realities that all federal employees face. Now more than ever, it's important to find ways to save you hard-earned money. One way is with life insurance from WEPA. WEPA offers lower rates and a premium refund policy that has returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. To learn how much you can save, visit WAEPA.org. Once again, that's WAEPA.org.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Garden of Life and Himalaya Herbal Healthcare.
Government IT executives, step into the past to start shaping the future. At this year's Executive Leadership Conference in Colonial Williamsburg, the American Council for Technology and the Industry Advisory Council's ELC Conference, October 23rd through the 25th, brings together government and industry leaders to address the acquisition, security, and human capital challenges you face in your increasingly mobile world. Register today at actgov.org. That's www.actgov.org.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tony Jimenez, my guest on Industry Chatter today. He's the president and CEO of Microtech. And just a few minutes left. It's been a terrific conversation. Thank you very much for coming in today, Tony.
Thank you, Francis. I appreciate it.
If somebody at an agency had to name their biggest misconception about any of the things that we've talked about, the relationship between vendors and the agencies, cloud computing, or any other of the technology things that we've talked about, what do you think it is that people at agencies don't understand as well as they could about doing business with vendors like your company?
that we are innovative, that we are trying every day to figure out how to do it better, faster, cheaper for them, because we know it's a competitive market. And if I can't go in and give you, the customer, the very best product that I can get my hands on for the very best price I can get my hands on, you won't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't come back to me if I don't deliver 100% on mark. In fact, our goal is to deliver it cheaper, faster, and ahead of schedule. And if we do that, we know that you're going to like us and come back to us again and again and again, which has been the case, and it's been why we've been able to grow the way we've grown.
The commitment to social media that we talked about during the break, we just have a minute or so left, but talk about why you think Twitter is so important for you and your team.
Everybody is wired in, for lack of a better term, and I love the fact that you can reach out to so many. I use my Twitter regularly, and I encourage my folks to use it. I think social media is a critically important part of where we're going. And I'm not a young guy by any means, and I think that sometimes the misconception is I don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a young people thing. You better believe it's a young people thing. And if we want to reach out and we want to remain relevant and we want to be part of where it's going and what's happening, we got to be part of that.
I just started following you as we spoke at Microtech CEO on Twitter, and I'm looking forward to following your tweets, and I really appreciate you being here today,
Thank
Tony.
Thank you, Francis. I appreciate you asking me.
Great to see you. Tony Jimenez is the president, CEO, and founder of Microtech, my guest on Industry Chatter. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose right around the corner.